keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.
This hour on the programme, we have another Election 2016 candidate interview. Today, we're joined by Alex Allinson, who's standing in Ramsey, the only constituency not to be affected by the constituency boundary changes. Good afternoon, Alex, and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Steve.
Or should I call you Doc?
Oh, you can call me Alex. That would be fantastic, thanks.
Because we're really talking politics today.
We are.
I expect that you're a well-known face around Ramsey, obviously, as a GP. But to people who don't know anything about you, just set your stall out. Who are you? Where have you come from? And what have you done so far?
Well, I suppose not. I'm now classed as a stopover. I came over from London 14 years ago now with my young family to take up a job as a GP in Ramsey. And one of the main reasons I came over was because Ramsey's got the College Hospital, good practice, big population, lots of things going on there. But what I've really learnt from the last 14 years is the sense of community there. And that's what's kept me both there and on the Isle of Man. And like any convert to something, I've sort of thrown myself in headfirst to the town and hopefully to the country as well. Got involved in the local schools, got involved with the lifeboat, been involved in terms of the commissioners, done two terms there, and really enjoyed being part of the community. And for me, the next step, particularly after work with the commissioners, was to take the next step up and actually see if I could make a bigger difference or a slightly different difference in the House of Keys.
All right, you're 50 years old. So is that a good age? Do you think you've been around the block a couple of times, you know how things work? Or do you think that we ought to encourage younger people or should you be older to get into politics?
Very good question. I think we need to get it balanced. I mean, the Lord Disvain report was quite interesting. The average age in the House of Keys is 57, almost 58 years old. Yes, you've got to have some people who are older. You've got to have some pensioners in there. We were talking earlier about pensions.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to have some pensioners there, but also you need some young people. I think you need people from different walks of life as well, and certainly you must tackle the inequalities in terms of female representation. I mean, when he did his report, 2 out of 35 were women, and that puts our representation below Iran, Bahrain, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Well, I get a little bit aggrieved when people say this, because what you're talking about is positive discrimination to get more women into politics.
Not necessarily. What we need actually is to ask why more women don't stand, what's holding them back, and then trying to change that so we get a better representation. I would like to see the House of Keys represent the whole population.
Sure.
And at the moment it doesn't. And that's not just age, but also gender as well. Now, I'm not talking about positive discrimination per se. I'm not talking about all female lists. But what I'm saying is that there are so many people on this island with real talents that perhaps don't feel able to put themselves forward. And we need to find out why and then try to change that. Because otherwise, when you look at pictures of Tim Wald, you do see a lot of grey men.
Sure, but there's nothing to stop a woman standing as you're standing now, yeah. Is there? And it worries me that you think that the system needs to change to get more to do it. Surely, if we want more women in politics, shouldn't they want to stand and work within the existing system?
We've been relatively successful in Ramsey to get slightly more women standing there, because it's not just national government, it's local government as well with commissioners. But I think it would be worthwhile just seeing, you know, are there any changes we can make in terms of having a creche in Tim Wald? You know, if you've got young women with families who can't do it because of childcare, who can't balance that with, oh, well, tonight I've got to stay on until 10 o'clock, can we have some decent childcare there? Yeah. You know, are there some inventive ways we can do to increase representation? Now, I haven't got all the answers, and I certainly haven't got, you know, as I said, I'm not even in there yet. This will be the first step for me. But you mentioned age. You know, gender is important as well, because what we want from a parliament is lots of people from all different backgrounds with different ideas, as you get on your phone-in shows.
Representation of the people by the people sort of thing.
Yeah, because we live in a representative democracy. You know, we vote people in. We don't have loads and loads and loads of referendums every week for new ideas. We vote people in because we think they probably got the nous and got the experience to represent our views. And one of the lovely things about the Isle of Man is, you know, I bump into Alan Bell in the co-op. And so if I want to have a go at him or congratulate him for a good or bad decision, I can do that.
Yeah.
And we do have very, very accessible politicians on this island, which is fantastic.
Is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? Because I sometimes think that people take it a wee bit too far. I mean, I'm sure one of the few jurisdictions in the world where all our politicians' names, addresses and telephone numbers are in the phone book, so anybody can phone them at any time. I wonder if they're too accessible and that somehow the public become inured almost to the fact that we've got politicians, and if you've got a pothole in the middle of the road, you can phone up the Chief Minister and complain about it.
I think that's one of the things I'm going to be challenged with if I get in September, is this dichotomy between very local politics and national politics. You know, do you want somebody like Alan Bell, Chief Minister, to be going around looking at potholes and cracked windows, or do you want him down in Westminster arguing the case when the UK come out of the EU that we're looked after? You've got to have a balance for that, but I think you're right. I mean, particularly in terms of health, I get quite a few people who are really angry about waiting lists, and so I'll go to my MHK, he'll bump me up the list.
Yes.
Well, no, it shouldn't have to be like that. I mean, there are genuine problems with waiting lists and things like that, but getting a politician to fight your cause in front of another 30 people who don't get their politicians to do it isn't a way to run
it's
a health service
or
democracy. And you need that balance, and you know, I'll be honest with you, that if I do get in, I will have to say no to some people. I have to say, well, actually, that's not appropriate. You know, I will tell you how to get around the system. I will tell you how to work the system. If that system is inherently wrong, I will do my best to sort it out for you. But queue jumping on waiting lists, or, well, we'll put your road ahead of your next-door neighbour's road because your potholes are more important to me because I'm after your vote, isn't the way to go. So I don't think it's a bad thing, because, as I said, there is a huge, great sense of community on the Isle of Man, and I think that both local and national politics taps into that.
Natural question from that, then, because you've been involved in the local commissioners, you know, do you think that the local commissioners ought to do more of that kind of thing, potholes and broken windows and things?
Absolutely.
And leave Tynwald, leave the House of Keys to national politics?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons for standing is after 8 years in Ramsey, we'd have discussions again and again and again of what the things we thought we could do better, we could do easier. Planning, potholes, street cleaning, looking after the waste management plant, looking after public sector housing, doing the allocations for it. A whole, you know, big, huge raft of things that we thought we wanted to do, but at every single opportunity there were always barriers. And some of those barriers were from civil servants, were from vested interests, or were, well, we've always done it that way.
Yes.
We've always sent a man up, and it was a man, we've always sent a man up with a broom from Douglas to clean your streets. On a Tuesday. We've always sent the traffic wardens up on a Wednesday as long as it's not raining. We've always done this. No, you can't give out your own parking tickets. We'd love to. And we've got quite a new set of commissioners now. But, you know, I've been going along to the meetings, even though I'm not a commissioner anymore. There is still that willingness there to take on a lot of the roles of central government, to localise them, to run them better, more efficiently and locally. Because we've got in the local authority a lot of the background knowledge of why things are
the way that they are. Do you think that working with Ramsey commissioners for two terms, I think you said, was that a good grounding for national politics, do you think?
It was certainly a good grounding in terms of national politics on the Isle of Man. I mean, I do other bits and pieces to do with medicine. I've been the main negotiator for GPs on the island for the last 12 years. I've been in the Isle of Man Medical Society, and before I came here I was involved in politics in the UK through various trade unions. So I've got an idea of national politics, but what we did at the commissioners was liaise very closely with politicians. So if we had a problem in Ramsey in terms of the harbour, in terms of the swing bridge, we'd get a minister up, we'd get a member up, and we'd talk to them about it. And that dialogue was really important for me to learn how things worked. And the link between national and local politics, and also introduced me to quite a few of the MHKs. And obviously before I stood, I had a long chat with quite a few MHKs about things like balancing being a full-time politician, but also not standing down as a GP.
Well, therein lies the rub, because, you know, we always hear that GPs are overworked and underpaid. I'm not sure about the underpaid bit, but overworked. We also hear from our MHKs that they do a huge amount of work, and that, you know, it's not just turning up to the occasional meeting, it's a full-time job. You're saying that you're going to do both. Now, I know that you've got a huge work ethic, and I don't doubt that, or your sincerity. Can you possibly remain as a GP and be an MHK and do justice to both jobs?
I definitely think I can, and what I've done before I stood was talk to a number of MHKs, both retired and serving MHKs, who hold down jobs, who run their own companies, and said, is it possible to balance the two? And the answer was yes. Now, I've been listening to all the radio broadcasts you've had, and I must admit, without flattering you, the standard of the debate has been fantastic. Leonard Singh was on Friday, and he made the point that being an MHK is a full-time job, not for the faint-hearted. It's not a part-time job, and if you treat it as a part-time job, you're going to fail your constituents, fail your town, and fail your country. Fairly strong words, but you know, I've got quite a lot of time for Len. I'll go along with that. I am not going into this to be a part-time MHK. This is not some hobby of mine. What I want to do is do a full-time job as MHK, but I've also listened to my patients, and when they heard that I was thinking about standing, and this was also at the last election, a lot of them said, look, we don't want to lose you as a GP. We appreciate what you do for us, which was lovely to hear. It's lovely to be appreciated. So what I've done is talk to my partners about scaling down my hours quite a lot of the practice, basically going to a part-time, and I'll play around with that. If it becomes really difficult, and if people are saying to me, Alex, you're not doing the job that we voted you in for, I will drop my hours even further.
Right.
But I'd like to continue to carry on my role, because a lot of my role is political. I get people coming in and they're in tears because they're unemployed. They're in tears because their benefits have been cut. They're in tears because of their housing problems. And it links in very, very closely with what I do. I mean, the other side of it is some of the extra stuff I do, I'm scaling back on. As I said, I'm chief negotiator for the GPs on the Isle of Man. We had a meeting from 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock last night, and at that meeting I stood down. We've got Jonathan Wilmot, one of the other GPs in the South, to take on that role. Stepped down from some of the work I did with the fostering panel last year, and I'll be scaling back some of the stuff I do with the Isle of Man Medical Society and the BMA, partly because it frees up more time, but also because you know, it doesn't allow too many conflicts of interest. I mean, you're talking about GPs being overworked and overpaid. We're not overworked. But the average GP is putting in a 60, 70-hour week. We're doing med shifts. We're doing night shifts. We're getting in at 8 o'clock. We're leaving at 6, 7. I don't need any pity for that. That's the job we take on. Are we getting overpaid? I don't think we are, actually. We're probably paid less than a comparative GP on the UK, but I don't want to live in the UK. I want to live on the Isle of Man. But what we are very good at is balancing our time, prioritising things, taking in a huge amount of information and dealing with people. And if you want to have MHKs who aren't part of an elite political class, who come from a decent background, particularly business, you know, at Ramsey Group Practice, we run it ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm a small businessman. I employ 30 people. If you want those sort of people in, you've got to get a bit of flexibility. So I'm not going to be a part-time MHK. I'm not going to fail my constituents. But I'm going to try to balance being a good representative MHK, but also being rooted to the local community by being there when people need me.
That's reassuring, and it's good to hear that you can actually scale back your hours as a GP if you need to,
yeah.
If you feel that you need to.
Well, I'm going to anyway. I mean, for instance, we've already put in adverts for another GP up at Ramsey, which isn't taking for granted me getting in, but we're thinking forward about other people who might want to reduce their hours. But I think people need to consider that if we want decent people to come forward as MHK, if we want them to bring a background and experience that will really help democracy, then we've also got to be flexible in how they balance the two. One of the big things about Brexit was it was people really feeling, you know, disenfranchised with politicians, thinking they had nothing to do with real life, that they were completely isolated, because all they'd ever done in their life was politics. You know, they'd gone to politics university, straight from public school, and straight into a cushy job.
Sure.
In Westminster. We don't have that on the Isle of Man, and we never should. We should be getting people in from loads of different backgrounds and making sure that they've got those skills also to bring to government.
What are the big challenges that we've got in the Isle of Man? And as a new member, do you have any prospect at all of being able to change things that are wrong with the island?
Yeah, for people who don't know, before this interview, you've sent out questionnaires to everyone about what are the main challenges and a series of questions which are published on your website. And I started writing it just before the Brexit debate, and then that hit. There's going to be huge amounts of change over the next couple of years, and that's going to accelerate. I mean, the news is bonkers at the moment with all the stuff going on in politics across, and that will have repercussions with us. And as Bill Clinton said, it's the economy, stupid. You know, we've got to keep the economy healthy on the island to afford anything. I mean, you were talking earlier about pensions, about childcare, about health. We have to keep the economy going, and we have to be creative with that. We have to balance all the different parts of the economy. You know, e-gaming is a big force. Is that healthy? Do we need to look into other bits and pieces? If UK come out of the EU, that may really affect things like the yacht and plane registry because of the VAT agreement. So we need to have a finger on the pulse of what's going on in Westminster, really.
And do you not think that maybe we've got that? Do you not think that our politicians have got a finger on that pulse?
I think we do at the moment. What I'm slightly concerned about is that we've had some fantastic politicians who've been extremely good at making contacts for the benefit of the Isle of Man on an international stage. And I particularly mention Eddie Teer and Alan Bell. Now, unless I've missed the news broadcast, I'm not quite sure whether Alan Bell's standing again. Eddie Teer said he's standing down. That's a big gap. We need some of that experience. Having a whole new set of people coming to Stimwell is great, new blood. But the next 6 months is going to be turmoil, and we need a bit of a steady hand in terms of some of that experience. Even if they don't want us to stand, perhaps co-op them onto a few boards so that we can use them as ambassadors.
I read through the questionnaire that you're talking about this morning before you came into the studio, and a lot of it was the sort of thing that you expect for a candidate to be saying. You know, we need to encourage more people to set businesses up in Ramsey. We need to encourage this. We need to do that. We need to get more business for the Isle of Man. Well, yes, I mean, they're all foregone conclusions, aren't they? But the fact is, have you got a plan to get these businesses?
No, they're not foregone conclusions, because everyone says it and then nothing happens. I mean, for instance, you just had this week an appeal for business sites on the west for development, but nothing in the north. What we've got in the north actually is some very intelligent people. I mean, David Doricott has set up the Mountain View Innovation Centre at the site of the old film studio. Film studios at the time was a great little money earner, but then everything changed. It's all gone over to Northern Ireland with Game of Thrones, and the place has been empty. So what he's done is, purely with his own money and his own resources, is start up basically an IT park where you can go there, you can rent a desk for next to nothing and set up your own IT company. But it's had very little publicity. A lot of people don't know it exists. We could also genuinely, with the right political force, get some of the back offices, for instance income tax, up into Ramsey, get it out of Douglas, get some of the office space that's already zoned for planning, get that built and get people up there and diversify the economy a bit more. There are some clever ways of doing it. The various funds, initiative funds that have been set up by government, some of those need to go out to the different parishes, including Ramsey, but also Peel, also down south as well, so we can get some startup companies going there. For instance, I think Oddbins were meant to be coming into Douglas, but they've lost their planning to set up a huge warehouse which is going to deal with all the mail order for the UK. I'm quite happy having that up in Ramsey.
Yeah, okay. Well, obviously Ramsey is your prime concern. You're talking about a voluntary tourist levy on flights and ferry crossings to raise money for the Queen's Pier. Should everybody that comes to the Isle of Man have to pay towards the Queen's Pier?
It was an idea. I mean, the thing with the Queen's Pier from a Ramsey point of view is it's a waste. I mean, a huge amount of money has been spent just keeping it from falling down, but nothing is being done to do it up. And I think the majority of people in Ramsey would like to have it done up. Now, from a central government point of view, at the present time, I don't think I can argue for the millions of pounds it would cost when people are talking about pensions, when people are talking about healthcare cuts. However, if we can get some voluntary money, some business money, some sponsorship to do it up, more than happy to do that. The voluntary levy, I mean, if you go on Facebook, often there's little bits of donations there that you can donate £1 to this, £1 to that. why not have that on some of the government websites? And then if people want to contribute small amounts of money, particularly some of the tourists, we could raise some money that way.
You also mentioned a marina for Ramsey. I mean, that's a pretty contentious issue, and half the people might agree with you, but half won't.
Yes, Again, in my time as the commissioners, we've had huge, great talks about marinas, and it has been incredibly divisive in the past. What we did agree with as a commission, and people like Wilf Young, who I do respect because they do have an opinion, and it's not just the solitary one, even he admits that having a marina in the old part of the harbour would actually work. After all the fiasco in Peel with all the dredging and silting up, I've changed my mind. I don't think we should have a marina covering the whole harbour at the Swing Bridge, but a smaller one, which would still be bigger than the one you've got in Douglas. I mean, the old part of the harbour would work. Now, again, I'm not asking for government money for that. What we could do would be creatively talk to some of our citizens of high net wealth who run companies here and say, look, we'll give you some land so you can build your executive offices if you put the money in to build a marina, and then that would be run by local people to actually bring revenue and tourism into the island.
Crime and Punishment, then, because the jail is up. It's not quite in your manner, but it's not far away. You're in favour, I think, of more non-custodial sentences for drug offences. Talk to me about that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's nice to see that Ewan Watson's put out a consultation document this week in terms of looking at sentencing. I've got some background here. My dad's a copper. I always remember during the Brixton riots coming down in his riot helmet with a couple of dents in it. It was on the banisters. And so I've spent a little bit of time at Scotland Yard going round with policemen in the UK. Did a little bit of criminology when I was at university and ended up working at the prison for a couple of years as the prison doctor. And what I saw was waste. What I saw was a lot of young people in there, often for stupid drug offences, relatively minor offences, or violence to do with alcohol, who were then locked up at huge expense. I mean, I think the budget for the Isle of Man prison is about £8 million a year to keep just over 100 people in there. But we've got, I really believe that that's a waste. I think you need to look at sentencing because it's fairer. You need to lock up those people who are a danger to society, and the idiots who've just got in trouble because they've taken drugs or alcohol, actually help them. I mean, in terms of drugs offences, I think there is a big move now to actually look at the decriminalisation of drugs. Not just me, it's not
I think David Nutt's got many
views. There's David Nutt, also the Royal Society for Public Health have come out with that. And I think if you looked at Ray Lakeman's video after the tragic death of his two sons, looking to sort of look at decriminalising drugs so that people could actually get the right information that they needed, would be safer. I think that was incredibly powerful to watch. The war on drugs, a bit like the war on terror, isn't working.
No, it's lost.
And having bans on legal highs, you can just buy it from the internet. It's a nonsense. Prohibition has never worked. It didn't work in America with alcohol. It doesn't work with drugs. And what we need is a bit more of a grown-up policy to actually not get people into prison. Once you're a young man or a young woman, you're jailed for a drug offence. You've got that on your record for life. You can't go with your family to Disneyland. You can't get into America with that. And what we should be looking at is actually giving these people the help they need rather than the punishment. The other side is in Holland, they have weekend prisons.
Yeah.
So people can continue to work during the week, but every Friday night they're going to get banged up.
It's a thought, isn't it? Where do you stand on this debate recently about the abortion laws in the Isle of Man?
I think the abortion law as it is out of date. I've gone through it, and publicly I've said I think it needs rewriting. The reality is that abortion isn't illegal on the Isle of Man. We're not the same as Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, but it's very, very difficult to get. And there are so many archaic hoops you have to jump through to get a legal abortion that most people don't bother. Now, what's also happened since that was written was safe legal abortions coming in, medical abortions, which basically mean taking some tablets. It's still traumatic. It's still a decision most women never, ever want to make. But if we could have legal abortion available on the Isle of Man, I think that would help hugely some of the scared, isolated women who end up having to pay and not pay the rent and not be able to feed themselves, but have to pay to go over to the UK. We have this stupid policy here that, oh, we'll legalise it as long as it's done somewhere else and won't take responsibility for that.
So, I mean, it's been suggested that we could just cut and paste UK legislation. I mean, are there other things maybe where we ought to do that rather than debate these things to
bits? I actually think we could do better than that. The UK legislation's a bit out of date. I mean, when we're talking about abortion, it's basically, I think, in terms of fairness, in terms of bringing legislation in that actually treats people equally. Because at the moment, the abortion legislation is unequal. If you're rich, you can get on a plane, you can fly over to Manchester and you can afford abortion. If you're not rich, you can't, and you're stuck with it.
All right, we're running short on time now, but in terms of the rich and the poor, I'm sure that you agree that the poor ought to be given better breaks and that the rich may be the ones that ought to pay for it. I mean, do you agree with that?
To a degree. I don't hate rich people. I've got nothing against wealth. Barul, fantastic Manx band, have got a great song called the High Net Worth Individuals, which is based on an old Manx song. And one of the lines is, "New lords of our land, them and their like, bestowing us the pauper's plenty." There is this idea of trickle-down effect from the rich. It's nonsense. It doesn't work. If you're talking about the tax cap, I want to make sure that actually brings in extra money. Okay. To be honest with you, rather than it's a subsidy for the rich. Eddie Tear was fantastic at the weekend. I spent a couple of hours with him, and he's said that he's quite happy to talk to any prospective candidates to give them some background. And I asked them, I said, look, you've got a tax cap, I think it's £125,000. You know, does that actually bring extra money into the Alaman economy? And he was fairly sure that it does. Yeah, it brings in about 34 million. So let's not attack the rich. As long as they're paying their dues, quite happy for them to come and live here.
We're completely out of time, but it's been great to talk to you. Candidate for Ramsey, Alex Allinson, thanks for joining us today.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.